case will be 081600, Northland Appeal Pharmaceuticals, the Mylan antibodies. Mr. Wallace?
Thank you and good morning, guys. This appeal relates to over $1 million in undocumented translation costs that were assessed in this matter. There were two very insufficient.
They're totally undocumented?
There are two declarations that get back. There's one declaration, which is the conclusory Sylvester declaration, which just says.
Well, so the trial exhibits, they actually counted the number of pages, right? They were translated.
They counted the number of pages that were translated. The key issues, Your Honor, are whether the pages that were translated were reasonably necessary.
Is that the only issue with respect to the trial exhibits?
No, the other issue, Your Honor, is that the trial exhibits were translated for two separate parallel cases, the Mylan case in West Virginia and the Teva case in New Jersey.
Okay, so those are the two issues with respect to the trial exhibits.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, with respect to the...
But if I could add, Your Honor, there's no production of the underlying invoices or proof of payment. There are conclusions that we think these many pages were translated, but there is no submission as to why all these things were translated that were not used at trial.
Okay. Now, as to the privilege, the documents that were claimed to be privileged and were viewed by the court in hand, there was no count of the pages that were translated.
As I understand it, they made a guesstimate based on how many reams of paper will fit into a banker's box, and then they made a guesstimate as to what percentage of the privileged documents, allegedly privileged documents, were in Japanese and what were.
Yeah, which might be a problem, but I looked at your submission down below. I didn't see that you complained about that.
Well, we complained about the whole methodology, Your Honor.
No, I'm talking to you about specifically about the methodology applied to the privileged documents. I don't see any complaint in there that there was something wrong with their estimate using the 8 boxes and 1,000 pages per box that was translated. I didn't see an objection.
Well, we objected to the overall procedure, and the main objection of the privileged documents were there are a large number of these allegedly privileged documents which were ultimately held by the magistrate judge to not be privileged. And we maintain that we should not be compelled to pay for the translation costs for things which were determined to be improperly withheld as privileged. And again, the overarching point is all of this was apparently done for both the Teva case and the Mylan case, and they conveniently say, let's stick Mylan with the cost for the whole thing.
Yeah, but the use of the documents in two cases was by voluntary agreement, and not by court order.
Well, the court approved the joint discovery of the parallel cases, and the point being that they were pursuing two parallel cases. There's no statement in any of their declarations that they didn't need to translate
they
exactly.
They didn't need the FEMA to use the discovery from this case to the other case, right?
That's right. In fact,
and so why does that mean that the costs here have to be reduced and shared?
Well, it was not just using the evidence in the other case, Your Honor. The actual depositions were conducted on a combined basis.
Okay, so why does that compel the court to allocate the cost between the two cases?
Well, in terms of what's reasonable and fair, Your Honor, the...
Well, wait a minute, counsel, but I thought, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I thought the only depositions at issue with regard to costs were the ones noticed by Lila. Is that right? So they're the district court judge didn't just give everything that was used or everything that was asked for. With regard to the depositions, in particular, the Teva litigation versus this litigation, the only deposition costs that were awarded were ones specifically noticed by Mylan, which would have been unique to this case, or at least necessary for this case. It, certainly, I think your point would be more compelling if, for example, you wanted to pick out a few documents or had picked out a few and showed us this was unique to Teva. It had no bearing on our case. It was a deposition of a Teva corporate officer regarding their intent when they did something. You follow me?
I understand the point you're making, Your Honor, but it's just not applicable here. The Japanese depositions, the depositions, not the translations of the exhibits, the Japanese depositions were taken on a joint basis with Teva counsel and Mylan counsel sitting side by side in Osaka. So these were depositions taken with both captions on the transcript by both parallel defendants. As far as the documents are concerned, the translation of the documents, which is the bulk of the cost, these documents were translated, they were put on the exhibit list. Only 70 out of 350 of the translations were actually used at the trial. There is no declaration saying it was reasonably necessary to have that other 280 translations, the bulk of the translation cost, for the Mylan trial.
Counsel, why didn't you pull up some of those documents then and show us how unnecessary they were? Why didn't you, I'm not saying go through all 350 of them, but why not pull out 10? So that you can show the district court and us, look, these 10 documents on the exhibit list bore no relation to the issues that ultimately went to trial. Because for you to just make a sort of in the air statement, well, they only use this many of this many, it's not that compelling. And our standard of review is abuse of discretion for this.
I understand that.
So you got a real steep hill.
Your Honor, they only use 70 out of the 350 translations. They give no explanation that the other 280 were reasonably necessary for the preparation of the trial. They just put them on the exhibit list. The district court, we submit, used the wrong standard. The district court said it was Mylan's burden to prove that all those 280 documents were irrelevant and inadmissible, a totally impossible burden for us because admissibility is going to be judged in the context in which something's offered. This is not a situation, with all respect, Your Honor.
Where did the court say that you have to prove that they're irrelevant and inadmissible?
I believe it's on Appendix 827, 28, also attached to our opening brief. Appendix 26 and 27.
Where is this? Where did they say?
Let me find that.
Proof that they're irrelevant and inadmissible.
This is related to the privilege law, counsel. This irrelevant and inadmissible is we're discussing the privilege law. That's different from the trial exhibits, which you and I are talking about. Totally separate arguments, aren't they?
It's my understanding that's the argument she applied to all of them.
I don't see how you get there.
And how can we prove something that is inadmissible when we don't know in what context it might be offered?
Well, I don't read her as saying that you had to prove that with respect to the trial.
Nor do I.
But so it strikes me that Judge Moore is asking why not go through there and at least come up with some examples of exhibits that they didn't need. Why shouldn't you at least do that?
Well, Your Honor, with all respect, they determined that they didn't need them. Now, I could hypothesize.
Well, counsel, that's because they're defendants, right? They don't know exactly what you're going to put on in a case in chief until you do, yet they have to designate their trial exhibits in advance. Isn't that usually the way the process works?
Well, they were the plaintiff, but we had the burden of proof.
Right.
We had the burden of proof. We went
first.
Your Honor, I understand they say we went first. We did go first. They knew what the issues were. Now, I could hypothesize a situation. If we had five issues at the pretrial stage and we went to trial and only one out of five, then they could say, well, we designated all these exhibits because you said you were going to have all these defenses, which you ultimately did not pursue. You dropped them. We didn't do that. That's not this case. This case was not a case of dropped issues. I know that happens in lots of cases. So their exhibit list was prepared for precisely the case we announced we were going to put on and precisely the case we, in fact, put on.
Well, great. So why don't you go through and find some of the exhibits that weren't reasonably necessary?
Well, they were largely duplicated. Many of them we don't have a clue why they translated them.
Well, you could say, you could give us some examples. You could have given the district court some examples of things that, you know, didn't seem to have any relationship to the case at all or weren't reasonably necessary. And maybe then the district court would have said, well, let's put some burden back on them to show that. With some more detailed showing as to why the rest of the exhibits were reasonably necessary.
Well, Your Honor, of course we could have done all sorts of things, but that's really shifting the burden away from the party claiming the cost. And to justify over $1 million in translation costs based on declarations which do not address at all why the majority of the exhibits were put on the list. Not yours. They just simply.
Want to say your rebuttal?
Yes, thank you.
Good morning, may it please the court. Daiichi respectfully requests that the district court's judgment be affirmed in all respects. This is a situation. Yes,
I don't think we were in doubt.
Okay.
What about the estimate with respect to the privilege documents? That seems to be a bit thin. They may not properly raise that issue, but you know, they didn't have access to the majority of these documents. They only had access to the ones that were produced. So they couldn't do much to refute your showing with respect to why, at least with respect to the privilege documents, wasn't there a count of translated pages, or at least a sampling of the translated pages, which you didn't seem to do?
Certainly, unlike the trial exhibits where there was, because in that situation, Your Honor, the base numbers were given from the exhibit list. It was a manageable task, but here...
What's unmanageable about taking a box of documents and asking a paralegal to count the number of translated documents in the box?
Yeah, in this case, sir, we didn't do it. And
I think it would have been easy to do it, right?
We relied on an estimate, and you know, easy is a relative word. It would have taken a very significant amount of time to go through eight boxes of 20-some thousand pages.
It's good on a sample. You would have 2 hours of paralegal time to do a sample. And our decision in Summit suggests that maybe you should do that.
Yeah, and in Summit, Your Honor, the court said page-by-page precision is not required. What's required is to present a calculation that's reasonably accurate under the circumstances. And in this case, Your Honor, we respectfully submit that the 8,000 estimate was reasonable under the circumstances. The court looked at every one of those documents. The court had them. So the court was familiar with the record, and in any costs analysis where the sufficiency of the proof.
The suggestion is that the court should have counted the documents instead of you.
No, Your Honor, I'm saying
very reasonable.
I'm saying that the court went through them over 4 weeks, day by day, and was familiar with them. And that's part, you know, they were in the courthouse. I'm not saying the court had to go count it, but nobody disputed it below. We put in an estimate, it was accepted, and yes, it was an estimate. And yes, we didn't count, Your Honor. And yes, we could have. We respectfully submit we did meet the Summit standard because it was a reasonable estimate given the circumstances of the case. The court was uniquely positioned to assess the sufficiency of the proofs, and it did so here.
Counsel, 30% of the documents were wrongly logged on the privilege log? I mean, look, I know this is not a precise art, and 10%, 15%, I would have expected is somewhat normal. But 30%, I mean, your privilege log had 1,461 documents, and 477 of them were determined to have been required to be produced?
Some with redactions, Your Honor. Some had been determined to be letters from a lawyer, but didn't contain substantive advice, but more in the nature of transmittal letters or the like. But in most cases, what we were required to do by the court was submit evidence and declarations from attorneys in all the foreign countries. This log was created because the patent was filed worldwide.
I'm assuming you had lots of foreign prosecution,
yes.
And you just unfortunately designated all of them confidential, which of course they're not all entitled to be privileged. You designated them all privileged. Is that what happened?
No, Your Honor. As a matter of fact, there was a couple of versions of the log. An initial log was perhaps somewhat over-inclusive. Mylan raised some concerns. We went back through. Certain things came off the log.
Wait, when you say the original log was somewhat over-inclusive, you mean something more than 1461. You're not talking about the 1461 number.
It was broader than that, Your Honor.
So it was broader than that, and you're saying that was somewhat over-inclusive. 30%, I'm saying, is way off the mark for what's reasonable. So somewhat over-inclusive would be a pretty big understatement, counsel.
Well, there's certainly Mylan makes its arguments in that regard, and we could look at it from the standpoint that two-thirds were upheld, and given the size of the case, we felt the motion was overbroad. They challenged every single document on the log, and that because of that, the court needed those translations in order to go through over the course of 4 weeks. So we felt Mylan's motion was overbroad. There was letters on that log that were clearly from a U.S. law firm to our client, which we don't think could have even rationally been challenged, but yet every single document was challenged. But in terms of the costs that were awarded here, putting aside the numbers, the court needed the translations, and so our position is that we were required to put them in. Therefore, they were necessarily obtained for use in the case. The same goes for the trial exhibits that were not admitted at trial. And while Mylan argues that, excuse me, Your Honor? Oh, sorry. Mylan argues that we made no showing of necessity or relevance, but again, we were required to submit those by the district court. And this is a case where Mylan raised practically every defense in the book. There was prior invention, indefiniteness, a huge case of obviousness involving many real-world factors, inherent anticipation, multiple theories of inequitable conduct. Contrary to what Mylan has just argued, some of those defenses, the first two I mentioned, they fell out after the plaintiff's or after the defendant's opening case. We didn't have to put on rebuttal. We got.
I don't understand what this has to do with whether you should get the cost of translating the documents as to which privilege was not properly claimed.
Okay, and back to that point, Your Honor, because whether the privilege turned out to have been proper or was overruled by the court needed the translations for all of them. The court needed the translations to do its in-camera.
But they needed them because you inappropriately put them on the privilege log. They needed them because of a fault of yours. Because otherwise they would have just been disclosed in discovery and they could have made the decision of whether to translate them or not themselves.
And with respect, Your Honor, we respectfully disagree that these were improperly claimed. They were found by the court over our objections to have been put on the log, but the court considered wrong. But we had good faith grounds to do that. In practically every situation, we made our arguments, the court heard it, you know, the court considered it, the court looked at everything. We felt that the court applied too liberal of a standard, actually, and that the number should have been much smaller.
But the question with regard to translation has nothing to do whether you were in good faith or bad faith or this or that. You were wrong. You put these things, just as though, suppose in your exhibit list for trial, you had a bunch of exhibits that had nothing to do with this case that you were asking for translation. The fact that you did it in good faith wouldn't entitle you to recover the translation costs for those documents.
Well, if they're not necessary for the case, then we shouldn't be entitled to recover because that's the standard. Our position going into the district court when we submitted the bill was that we were required to do so. The court needed them. And the district court assessed all of the proof that we submitted and found that they were necessary.
So why is it that one and the other case that you settled and you agreed that each party would bear its own costs, why is it that you believe it's appropriate to then charge a Mylan with those same costs?
Sure, Your Honor. this was not a situation where the Milan case was formally consolidated with Teva, and they ran as one case so that all the costs were essentially incurred in both cases. There was certain limited discovery that was agreed to by the parties, namely depositions of Daiichi's witnesses in Japan that occurred jointly with the permission of the court. And as we've noted, so what we're talking about is a tiny fraction of the overall costs that were awarded might be termed shared costs at all. For example,
the question is what to do about those shared costs.
But the translation costs, for example, what we did for the trial exhibits was not used in Teva. Teva never went to trial. The Teva case, they agreed to be bound by the judgment in the Milan case except for one narrow issue of inequitable conduct that was decided on summary judgment.
But there were joint depositions, right?
Yes, sir.
So you were covering the costs with respect to that.
Well,
without sharing, right?
We did recover the costs, and the court did not order us to share them with Teva. Correct. And I would simply note in response that those were depositions.
I don't think the argument is that the court should have ordered them to be shared with Teva. The argument is that your recovery should be reduced to account for the fact that they were the costs should have been allocated between the two cases. Mm-hmm.
But those depositions, Your Honor, they were noticed by Milan. They were taken by Milan's attorney and Teva's attorney. They split the questioning, but the overall length was the same. And they would have cost the same had Milan asked all the questions. So Milan achieved some benefit too. And even though they were joint, those depositions were used in the Milan case.
Well, in situations like this, forget about this case, where depositions are taken to be used in two cases. Is there a general agreement that some of the costs should be allocated to one case and some of the costs to the other case? What's the practice?
Practice is, Your Honor, that it just shakes out at the end of the day. Whichever case
so
is resolved.
There's not a practice to have an advance agreement as to how the clause should be allocated.
We didn't have one here, Your Honor, and I've never been a part of it. And in this case.
I'm saying, in equitable, at least, you agree to be able to prepare your own cost for that case and then transfer it to another case.
Right, but with respect, Your Honor, we don't view it as a transfer. In the Teva case, we settled. Okay, we gave up. Teva agreed to give up its appeal to this court in exchange for our not seeking costs.
Well, in a sense, you recovered the costs as part of that agreement. So maybe in a sense, you're recovering the costs twice.
But Your Honor, we never did recover twice, and we would not have done so. If we recovered from...
You didn't explicitly recover the price, but as part of the agreement with Teva, that undoubtedly was a factor. Could you have recovered costs from Teva with respect to these depositions if the case had come to the point of a decision awarding costs?
It would not have been fair for us to seek to recover costs for the depositions.
But you would have had an argument to recover half against Teva.
Not if we had already recovered the full amount in Milan.
Forget it.
Okay. In a hypothetical,
if the Teva costs issue had come up first, you could have argued that Teva should have paid at least half the cost of these depositions, right?
Yes, Your Honor. That's true. But for example, we did not charge Milan for copies of documents we produced to Teva. So we incurred separate costs in the Teva case that had nothing to do with Milan that aren't at issue here. We're talking about a tiny fraction of the costs that the court allocated against Milan in this case.
How tiny is it?
Well, if you go through the court's allocation at the end, I can't give you a dollar amount, but certainly the translations that are at issue here aren't relevant. The privilege dispute didn't occur in Teva.
It was an issue in the case.
The privilege dispute was an issue in the Milan case, Your Honor. Teva never challenged the law. There was no in-camera review in Teva.
The allocation from the Teva case in this case is an issue in this case, right? Are you saying that it's de minimis, or we should look at it?
Well, I'm saying two things, Your Honor. First of all, it's nowhere near 50% if there is an amount at all. Second, I can't say that it's...
Counsel, we wouldn't be the ones to decide it, right? We vacated and remand if this is the route we want to go for the district court, because this is going to be a labor-intensive fact-finding exercise, it seems to me, because someone's going to have to ascertain how the apportionment should be struck.
On this record, Your Honor, absolutely correct. This court can't figure that out based on the record.
And it's not from them.
It would be more than $1,000, but less than $50, Your Honor. So I can't call that de minimis. I can say that it's nowhere near 50% because the translation
less
cost...
Less than 50,000 or 50%?
Oh, 50,000.
Okay, just want to make sure.
It might include some of the costs of reward for deposition transcripts on page 31 of Judge Keeley's order. And a small amount of fees for witnesses, because certain witnesses travel from Tokyo to Osaka for those depositions, and perhaps some of the interpretation costs, but I would have to check. One point I'd like to make on another issue is Mylan's reliance on the Farmer case and the sparingly exercised language. That language was disapproved by the Supreme Court in the Crawford case 25 years later, and so we don't think that that should be given much weight at all. That's at 442 U.S. 482-83. And I see that I'm out of time, and thank you very much.
Let me state first off, follow up on Judge Moore's question about whether the burden of proof shifted just on the privilege log issue or the exhibit list. Judge Keeley, on page 26 of her opinion, which is the appendix to our opening brief and also the joint appendix, says Mylan has not established why specific exhibits included on Daiichi's exhibit list were irrelevant, et cetera, and inadmissible at trial. So, that was Judge Keeley's position, that the burden of proof was on Mylan. As far as the Teva case is concerned, I think counsel made it quite clear, he's correct. For most issues, Teva agreed to abide by the outcome of the Mylan trial. So the Mylan trial was, in effect, on almost all issues, a Mylan trial and a Teva trial. Therefore, it's not just those 30 days of Japanese depositions. It's the entire trial and the exhibit.
When did the settlement occur?
Settlement occurred after the Mylan trial, the Teva settlement. And
was it a joint trial that was going forward with both Mylan and Teva?
No, it was not.
And
it
I'm
was
confused
a Mylan
about
trial.
How to say it's a Teva-Mylan
let
trial.
Let me see if I can make it clear. It was the Mylan trial in West Virginia. Teva had agreed in New Jersey that on all but a couple of inequitable conduct issues, Teva would abide by the outcome of the Mylan trial. That's why I say, in effect, it was a Mylan and a Teva trial, yet they're trying to stick Mylan with the $1 million worth of translations for all these exhibits. Now,
what is the practice when there's shared discovery in two cases? The parties normally have an agreement with that with respect to how the costs would be allocated between the two cases. How is this handled?
Probably an infinite variety of ways. Obviously, if we'd known that Daiichi was going to try to stick us with the whole thing, we would have had an explicit agreement. Certainly, if we have another case with them, we'd certainly try to do that. Counsel is correct that in the Teva settlement, each party agreed to bear its own cost, but it's not as though Daiichi walked out of there empty-handed, because Teva, in effect, agreed to a judgment, waiving appeal, and in effect agreeing to stay off of the lucrative market. So Daiichi did not go empty-handed out of that, but then they sought to get the entire cost out of Mylan. With respect to the privileged documents, counsel said the court went through all of these for a month. It was the magistrate judge. It was not Judge Keeley. Judge Keeley, as far as the record is concerned, never saw those documents, knew nothing about them other than the cause petition. So, in short, Your Honor.
Well, you all, I mean, the one thing that bothers me is obviously this is an issue. The district court judge is a really good field for this kind of thing because the district court judge is the one dealing with both of you on a regular basis. So, you're asking for too much because you're asking for a motion to compel on everything on their privilege law when there's some things that clearly shouldn't have been. And they did bad because they had a bunch of stuff on there that shouldn't have been. Isn't the district court judge ideally situated to be the one who decides just how much to apportion because she's the one dealing with you guys on a regular basis, and that's why we have this abusive discretion standard.
Well,
so how do I conclude she abused her discretion in light of all that?
Well, as far as the privilege controversy is concerned, she delegated all that to the magistrate judge. She had nothing to do with the review of the documents, with the decision, and so forth. And as you pointed out, there were whole categories of documents for which lawyers weren't involved. It was patent agents in countries where they're not in title.
But there was a whole category of documents for which clearly they were privileged, and yet you guys locked them in on your motion to compel anyway.
Well, of course, our motion to compel is based on a log without looking at the documents.
But it says to, who it's to, who it's from. I mean,
that's true. But
I'm sure you could have looked at that and ascertained that there were some number short of the entire privilege law for which you knew you weren't entitled.
No, everyone we asked for, we thought in good faith we were entitled.
You asked for everything on there. You really thought they had nothing privileged?
Their privilege log was so sketchy we had no way of knowing, and this involved countries for which privilege clearly did not apply. I see my red lights on the violation. Thank you very much, Rose.
All rise. The Honorable Court is adjourned until tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.